The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Good morning. Welcome back to Analyze This with Neville James. I'm Emil Henderson sitting in for him. If you want to join the conversation today, please give us a call at 340-718-0761. Again, that number is 340-718-0761. I have live in the studio with me Ms. Jamila Russell, the former ADA coordinator for the Virgin Islands, and we've been discussing issues involving our children with special needs and what rights they have and their parents may have and how they are working through this pandemic and about into virtual education. Before we continue what I stopped off on, Jamila, I want to ask a quick question. Mm-hmm. Is there a way that if you suspect an adult may have suffered or may have Asperger's that you can get an adult tested? Can an adult go in and say, I want to be tested for Asperger's to see if I fall on the spectrum?
It would have to be in a private setting. There isn't right. There isn't a program that I can recall to diagnose adults with disabilities like that. Normally, an adult becomes a member of the disabled community due to an accident or, you know, some illness. Mm-hmm. And then it's defined when that happens. So if you're in a car accident and you have a traumatic brain injury that causes you to have loss of cognitive ability, then that's defined as a cognitive loss, a traumatic brain injury, a TBI. However, to the best of my knowledge, that would have to be done, you know, through your like primary care physician or something.
So there would be no actual ADA government programs or anything that, like how we have for children, they can go and have all these different programs. For adults, it would be on them.
It would be on them primarily because autism, there are conspiracy theories around surrounding mm-hmm. autism, but that's a developmental disability.
Okay.
There are people who are like, oh, if I got a vaccine, I got, you know, all these conspiracy theories that goes around with that. But autism is a developmental disability in that it presents itself before the onset of your 21st birthday.
Right.
So if you're over 21 and you think that, oh, I've been going through life as a functional adult or a non-functional on the skirts of society, that nobody decided that they wanted to get you tested prior, you know, to being an adult, there isn't a program that I'm aware of.
Okay. Now, I asked that question specifically because I wanted us to segue into what we came off on the break with, which was parents who may be hesitant mm-hmm. about having their children tested, right? And what trauma a child who goes throughout their life undiagnosed for any disability or any behavioral developmental challenges, and they go unaddressed, right? Mm-hmm. What trauma that may cause them.
Mm-hmm. And there is a lot, because I'll tell you, immediately after, and you'll remember this, after Hurricanes Irma and Maria, we had data that indicated there were X amount of people in the territory with a disability.
Okay.
Right? And after Irma and Maria, we did a lot of public outreach, visiting, taking stuff into neighborhoods, and we would come upon homes where they were adults with disabilities living, and they have never been registered in any government setting. I'm trying to make sure I say it nicely. We had adults whose parents had given birth to them, and their parents didn't send them to school. they had never been enrolled in school because the parents at a young age recognized that their child was different. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, I am going to keep my child at home. And I remember an older lady with a middle age disabled child. Well, yeah. And she said she never let her go to school because she didn't want anybody to harass her, tease her, treat her badly. And then she couldn't deal with people asking her what happened to your child and all of that. And I remember coming up to Government House, and I was like, I can't wrap my head around this. This is unbelievable
around,
to me.
Around her response?
Yeah, I was, because I was like, I don't get it, because I grew, but I realized
but
that I grew.
But it's a raw, honest response
it
that
was.
Many parents have. And to, I'm not saying that you were judgmental by saying you couldn't wrap your head around it. What I'm saying is that sometimes our community may be judgmental to that parent because of that response that they had, when for the parent, their primary concern is, I want to protect my child from harm. And so you got to kind of sit back and yes. hold up for a minute and say, okay, let me hear what yes. this person is saying to me. This person isn't saying that I want to hold back from my child and I don't want my child to receive anything. I don't want to help my child. What this person is saying is, I'm fearful for my child and what my child is going to be exposed to out there.
The harmful element.
Yes.
And I was like, and then I was, and I told her, I said, well, I had to take Shashamani everywhere with me. And I said, and I think that's because any place that's appropriate, right? But I told her, it was difficult for me to wrap my head around because Uncle Sonny
right.
was Uncle Sonny.
Right.
And then I realized how blessed we were, because that Frederickstead community, that Harrigan mm-hmm. West End Frederickstead community.
That you like to remind me.
That you're not a part of.
That I'm not a part of.
You're only 10%. Okay. 10%.
But that's okay.
90%.
I didn't mean to interrupt your flow, but go ahead.
But like Uncle Sonny and Leroy, like we embraced them.
Yes.
And so we had a village, and I told her, and she was like, well, and she wasn't from the Virgin Islands, and she said, well, this is seen as a judgment on the parent and on the child. And I told her, I said, it's not your fault. And I you know, I said, it's not your fault. I said, God ain't punishing you for anything.
Right.
And, you know, we got her the generator and all of that. And that's when we ramped up the conversations and the public campaign to allow, to teach parents that your child doesn't have to change for the world. The world gonna have to change for your child. Mm-hmm. And so don't hide your children. When I go out, there are kids that, you know, Shashamani had very long hair, and he has something called alopecia, and all of his hair fell out, and he was bald. He went bald in a month, and completely bald, smooth bald. And kids would ask, okay, so why doesn't he talk like me? And kids are the most honest creatures in the world. Mm-hmm. And we teach children hate, because children are curious and they may be scared about what they don't know. But if you tell a child, oh no, that's okay. He talks differently because, you know, and I explained it to him. I said, well, his brain is like a baby's still. So you know how when a baby is born and they can't really talk good? That's how his brain is. And then they're like, oh, okay. And so then they know how to engage and interact. So as parents, we have to be able to be okay with our child. And of course, there's those people who would watch and smirk. And I know that not all parents have a smart tongue like me. So they don't want their children to be ridiculed. Nobody wants their child to be ridiculed in public. Nobody wants their child to be looked at. But we can't change the way the world sees children and adults with disabilities if we hide children and adults with disabilities from the world.
Right. I mean, you mentioned Sunny and Leroy. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that came out of that, or knowing them for the 10% of the time that you alleged I was in Harrigan, was we saw them as persons, as people, as humans. Nobody saw them as, oh, that's that guy. He look at him. Nobody did that. Mm-hmm. We just, oh, that's Leroy. Oh, that's Sonny. Mm-hmm. And no one was afraid of them. Nobody, mm-hmm. you know, looked at them any differently than we would look at anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a testament to how then they become and feel comfortable living amongst everybody else. And mm-hmm. so I'm hoping that from this discourse that if there are parents who are listening to this episode, this show today, who may feel some hesitance or about getting their children or their child tested to get assistance, that they'll feel a little bit more comfortable after today. That they'll feel that they're not alone, that there are resources to help
and
them.
And they are.
That they don't have to feel any judgment or any shame about having a child with special needs. My hope is that this show today will help them to see that.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you this as a mother. We love our children, mm-hmm. right? We all love our children, and I you know, I'm not gonna sit here and let the radio community think that raising a child with special needs is somewhat easy. It's not. But raising children in general, without special needs, is difficult. You know,
children at times can be more difficult.
At times can be very, very difficult, with especially if a child doesn't have a disability. Some children, you know, quote unquote normal children, they give the parents a run for the money. But while there are challenges, and you may feel like, oh, everybody watching me, I can't do this because my child might. I remember one time, and this is something I did because parents, something as simple as taking a child to a movie, and some parents are so afraid to take their children to the movie, you know, a child with special needs, because if they're on a spectrum, they may have a tic, and they may say something inappropriate in the middle of the movie, and people watch you and like cut up your eye and all of that. And I remember, you know, just having one-on-one conversations with parents. They're like, something as simple as that, Miss Russell, we can't do with our children because, you know, people watch them funny. So I was like, you have a problem? What are we going to do? Guess what? The ADA going to just make the whole movie theater for children with disabilities.
It would be their screen.
It would be their screen. And all it took was one parent to tell me this. And then I had this crazy idea. I'm going to call Caribbean Cinemas, and we're going to have, you know, 80 at the movies. And then, but what's so wonderful was that when I went to do that and I called Caribbean Cinemas, they already had a program in Puerto Rico and they started the program here. So for children movies, like first screenings of children movies, they had a program where they would, you know, because children with disabilities have some sensitivities. The especially if you're on a spectrum, the loud noises can bother you. The flashing lights, you know, can, you know, mess with the child's equilibrium.
Okay.
And so, we did 80 at the movies, and you would be amazed. And what we did is whatever we did for children with special needs, we allowed regular children to tag along, you know, so that they could see that, hey, there's nothing to be afraid of. you can have a best friend that, you know, that isn't...
That may have some differences.
That has a disability. Shashamani and Elise Shang are the same age. And Elise is Henry's niece.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been in junior high together. And Shashamani walk into junior high. Elise isn't, you know, okay, she's like a popular girl. And she'd be like, hey, Shashamani, how are you?
But Shashamani's actually really popular too.
Well,
he's popular in his own right.
Yeah, but I'm just saying. But you have that kind of interaction.
Yes, yes.
And you need to allow your children to meet other children.
But children see the world differently.
They do.
And so...
That's why I like them so much.
They see the world differently, and they see the world from a lens of compassion, a mm-hmm. lens of humanity, until adults tell them not to.
Mm-hmm. And that's where
the problem
Adults are the problem. And so what we learned when we had this, when we did these experiments, well, or not experiments, when we provided these experiences
right.
for children and adults, was that quote unquote normal children had no issues interacting with children with disabilities. We had children in wheelchairs coming to the movies, and we had non-disabled children, helping them, giving them their popcorn and their sodas. And I sat back in awe at how, if we just provide them the environment. And so parents, don't not send your child to school. Well, now we have the pandemic, and we'll talk about that in a few.
Yes.
But allow your children to have experiences and exchanges with children who aren't disabled. They'll learn from each other.
Yeah. And as we go into the next segment, I want to talk a little bit about the pandemic
mm-hmm.
and how now that has added mm-hmm. another layer of anxiety for parents who have children with special needs.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, probably anxiety for parents who don't have children with special needs, especially as we morph our way into now having to do virtual learning because they can't go into our schools. And so I wanted us to be able to discuss a little about that. Are there any support groups in the territory that can assist parents as they go through this time, what this novice experience of having to help with the education, the full teaching of the virtual learning of a child with special needs,
okay.
and a child without special needs, if there are any programs or assistance. So when we get back,
okay.
we'll talk about that.
Welcome to Banking for Your Business. At Bank of St. Croix, we make it easy to mind your business. We offer checking and savings accounts with no hoops or hassles. Our mobile apps provide you access to your business accounts on the go, and our merchant card services allow you to accept credit and debit payments anywhere, anytime. Plus, with our easy-to-use online banking platform, our bank is always open. We invite you to come see the difference at Bank of St. Croix.
Hey, so what's a great way to spread awareness that driving high is illegal everywhere? A catchy song, of course.
You can run, but you can't drive high. You can run, but you can't drive high.
Friendly reminder, don't drive high. If you feel different, you drive different. brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The past is never past.
I had the audacity and the nerve to make a bid for the presidency of the United States.
Back in the days when Grandma was
feel
a girl, there was
history
no
as opposed merely to knowing facts of history.
I'm Rand Abdel-Fattah.
I'm Ramtin Arablouei. Join us each week on Throughline from NPR as we go back in time
to understand the present.
Saturdays at 7 a.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. on WTJX FM.
What's good, y'all? I'm Gene Demby, the host of NPR's Code Switch. We talk about race and identity on our show every week. Prepare to laugh and be mad and feel deeply uncomfortable. And we're paired with
NPR's Life Kit, where we give you the tools to get your life together. I'm Maria Godoy, a Life Kit reporter, and we can't wait to get started.
Code Switch and Life Kit, Saturdays at 2 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Good morning and welcome back to Analyze This. We are here talking with Jamila Russell, the former ADA coordinator for the Virgin Islands, and discussing dealing with children with special needs as we go through this pandemic and they go through virtual learning. If you want to join the conversation, please call us at 340-718-0761, 340-718-0761. So Jamila, before we went on break, I was asking you about whether or not there are any support groups or anything that parents who may feel overwhelmed can reach out to talk, get some assistance on having to deal through this pandemic with their children, whether they have special needs or not, but having to deal with their children during this pandemic, especially with the aspect of virtual learning. I think a lot of parents now are finally understanding the immense work that if you are a teacher, that you have to do every day when your child goes to somebody's classroom. And I'm hoping that they respect the work of teachers because it's not easy. And so are there any programs
unfortunately, there isn't a support group. However, I can say this, that... I haven't asked her to say this publicly, but she sent an email, so that means it's public. Cheryl Serrano Griffith, who is the district director of special education,
yes,
has a group chat. I don't know if it's called a group chat. She has a group chat, and we have an email group, and she sends us emails.
Great.
About what's going on in special education. You know, she sends messages asking, how are things going?
On next Friday, she'll be here.
Okay.
I'm trying to get her. She said, let me not say that then it can't happen. But
yeah.
My goal is to have her here.
Yeah.
If I'm on next Friday. Is to have her here so we can talk to her about what we're talking about now,
yeah,
from the aspect of what the Department of Education is doing.
Yeah, so she does that, and then she's been doing, I guess you can call it virtual town halls.
Okay.
So she does virtual meetings with parents, and then,
how has that been going?
The parents log on, they ask questions. Their parents are frustrated. I think that there are lots of parents that are frustrated, and it's difficult if your child. So when a child has an IEP, there are some things that are in the IEP. And I'm only going to speak about my child because I can disclose what's in his IEP, because the IEPs are confidential.
Right.
It's a legally binding document.
That's correct.
I can talk about what's happening with Shashamani. So Shashamani gets speech and occupational therapy. It's difficult to do occupational and speech therapy virtually, in that children with disabilities can become easily distracted. I have had times where Shashamani's logged in or should be logged in, and open disclosure, well, people know I work at the legislature, and he's supposed to be logged in, And a senator will come by my office if he's at the building with me. And they have said, you know, he and I are watching Beyonce. And I was like, no, that's the teacher. And so, and then, you know, he has found, he knows his way around a computer screen. So he has muted his teachers. He has turned off his camera. If we're at home, he does stuff like tell them, okay, bye. And then he goes in his bed. And so you have to appreciate the work of teachers. And I've said this prior to the pandemic, I can't be anybody's teacher, but I have heard from so many parents with children with disabilities about the hardship of virtual learning. Now, I'll say this, the Department of Education, the Division of Special Education, students who are in Mod 4 classrooms or self-contained classrooms, mm-hmm. they have the ability to come back on campus.
Oh, okay.
So they can be back on campus. However, there are lots of parents who are hesitant about returning their children into the classroom setting. And, you know, every parent, every family has to do what's best for their family. And a lot of parents with children with special needs have, you know, and when you have Ms. Serrano Griffith on, she could provide you the statistics about who's coming. You know, Shasha, I could speak about my son's classroom. He would be the only student in the class because, you know, his classroom, yes, you know, the other students wouldn't be in the classroom, in the classroom setting with him. So while the Department of Education has opened back up the campus to students in Mod 4 classrooms and self-contained classrooms, SIE classrooms, there are a lot of students within the educational system that there are a lot of students in the educational system that have an IEP but aren't in a special education classroom. They have an IEP but they're in the regular classroom setting. And that is where we're finding that a lot of parents are having additional difficulties, because when a student who has an IEP is in a regular classroom, you have where if you're doing a test, your IEP may say instead of a half an hour for the test, this child has to have 20 extra minutes, or you have to give them a different version of the test, or you have to have the teacher ask the student the question, administer the test differently. And so because of some of these challenges, I fear, and I don't have any data, but I fear that there are students who have an IEP or a 504 that may not.
What's a 504?
That's the Rehabilitation Act. It's for children with disabilities, but it addresses. It's a little bit different than the special education
okay.
curriculum, but you get the same types of protection. The 504 was around before the ADA and the IDEA. So there's some commingling, but there's some students who have a 504 and some students who have an IEP. But those students aren't sometimes getting what's in their documents because you can't deliver properly in a virtual format.
Okay.
So if a student has to be pulled aside 2 hours a day so that you can reteach them what you had in their regular lesson, and you know, change the when you're in a virtual setting, you can't. It's difficult to have two teachers sometimes in a regular classroom. When the teacher is teaching, the person that's assigned to a student with an IEP is there, breaking it down for the student. You can't really do that on the interweb.
So a 504 is not necessarily special education or special needs. It's treated the same, but you have different eligibilities for 504.
Yes, yeah, different eligibilities.
And so our schools are, in fact, doing 504s.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, yes. I want to make sure. I wasn't sure if that was clear, so I just wanted to make sure.
Yes, they are addressing
504s.
Yeah, they are addressing both. Okay. Yeah, but I'm thinking that there are difficulties in the delivery. And I know that there are difficulties in the delivery because Shashamani can't do occupational therapy virtually. You can't teach him to tie his shoes virtually. That's something that's hands-on. So there are students who are losing out. But I want to tell parents, and what a lot of parents don't understand, is that if your child is in a special education system and they have an IEP, the law allows you to keep your child in school until the age of 21.
Okay.
And so while Shashamani's in 10th grade, right? You know, you promote them every year. He's in 10th grade. And he's now 15. So he would be graduating at 17. If at 12th grade, he'd be done at 17. But you can opt to have them remain in school for the additional time until they're 21 so that they can complete and reach the goals that are defined in their IEP. And so many parents, you know, we all want a graduation. We all want to celebrate achievements. A lot of parents are like, okay, well, when they finish the 12th grade year, we're going to do the graduation and pull them out of school. But I always encourage parents, if you have a child with an IEP that isn't ready for vocational training,
okay,
or you don't have a child that's ready to go on to an institution of higher learning, that you retain the child in the school system until their 21st birthday and work with vocational rehab, because they're supposed to be working throughout your high school years. Work with them to have your child trained, because children with disabilities can function, and we have to, as parents, prepare our children, give them the tools and the resources, because we're not going to live forever. And I know this because I remember one of my grandmother's biggest fears was, if I die, who's going to take care of Sonny? And I grew up
arrogant.
Yes, and they still do. And he still has a community. But that was my grandmother's biggest fear. And so as parents, we have to recognize we're not going to be here forever. So don't hinder your children. Don't hide your children. Because if we were to die today or tomorrow, you have to think, have I given my child the best chance of surviving in this world without me? And if you know that you're not doing that because you're keeping them hidden at home, then you need to change and alter your behavior for the love of your child.
Right.
Because and when you present it to them in that fashion, parents begin to see it differently. Let me prepare my child for the day that I may not be here, and that how is my child going to cope if I am not there to help them? So allow your child to develop and grow into all that they can be. And I'm guilty of it. You know, I'm guilty. Sometimes I'm very overprotective. Sometimes I stop him from doing things. And, you know, but I have a support system that's very unique. And I recognize that because I have people in my... Jamila, that boy, you know. So when they see that I'm stopping him and they pull me up and they're like, you have to allow him.
Right.
Even at the legislature, there's a worker at the legislature and he'd ask Shashamani, so how you doing? And so when I'm trying to answer, he went, me talking to you, I talking to Shashamani. And so because I feel like maybe I need to interpret for him. And they were like, let him be. We understand. And if we don't understand, then we could come and ask you a question.
Right.
And so I've always had those types of people around, and parents, if you carry your child out and carry your child around, people will adjust. Your child doesn't have to adjust. People will adjust.
Correct. So I had asked before about support groups for parents living through this and through the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I just want to go a little bit more, a little deeper into mm-hmm. that. Specifically for the parents who have to assist their children with virtual learning, who may not have the basic skills to be able to assist their child with mm-hmm. the virtual learning. How are we addressing, are there any ways that we can, what solutions do you think we may have to assist in getting those parents to at least be able to not be so overwhelmed when it comes to educating their children? Because remember, they never had to do that before. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing to help them with homework and a different thing to constantly be there with them as if you were the teacher.
Oh, let me tell you. I would encourage parents to reach out. The Division of Special Education, whatever people may say about the Department of Education, the Division of Special Education has always been very responsive. Everybody's situation may be a little bit different, but even when parents run into obstacles and they call me to run interference or to help them in some way, shape, or form, it's usually not that the division isn't responsive. It's just that maybe the parents don't like the result of the conversation that they've had. But the Division of Special Education is very responsive. I would encourage parents who run into issues and obstacles. Lord, I hope she isn't listening so that she don't call me and cuss me. But call Lyria Bryan. Call Cheryl Serrano Griffith.
I know many of the people who work in that, at least on St. Croix. I can't say St. Thomas because at least on St. Croix, that's mm-hmm. who I've had to interact with over mm-hmm. my years. And I have to say that the Division of Special Education, for those who are in St. Croix, I'm impressed with what they do and
they're
how hard they work.
Yes.
And as you know, my cousin is a special education teacher. And
yes.
And I think she is the best.
Awesome.
Tony. Or little Tony.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think that she is the best. Yes. And so that whole group, I know they work diligently because of the family court appointments I get. Mm-hmm. I have to interact with them a mm-hmm. lot. Mm-hmm. And I know that they do an excellent job at, you know, getting to the children with special needs what they need.
Yes.
And so I'm saying that with the context that how with the virtual learning coming into play, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so that we don't run into any, now this is a lawyer in me now, mm-hmm. any legal issues, mm-hmm. right? Because of virtual learning. Because some people might claim that they can't get the services virtually and therefore you're violating the law.
They are.
So I want to talk about that when we get back from the break. So we'll be back in 2 minutes.
A very wet, cool, temperate rainforest, very misty, like low clouds will, you know, just kind of hover just above the treetops. But that's what I absolutely love about it.
From the Tongass National Forest in Alaska to where you live, let's make sense of the world together. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us for the next On Point.
On Point, weekdays at 10 a.m.
Human beings have been making music for tens of thousands of years. It brings us together. It has the power to communicate emotions and ideas. It's a profound part of the human experience. Hear the stories behind the music you love and new music you might fall in love with. I'm Raina Duras. Join me for in-depth interviews with artists who are continuing that musical history on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
If you're worried your friend may be struggling, remember, you don't have to be there to be there.
You can say how while you will get a fake tattoo. You can ask with an app if it works for you. You could chat on a game, kick off your flip-flops. You can ask on your couch while you binge watch.
Whatever gets you talking.
Reach out to a friend about their mental health. Learn how you can help at seizetheawkward.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Morning, Mama. How you feeling?
Great, and I'm ready for you today.
I'm checking in on ya. Morning meditation?
Check.
Dressed and ready to work out?
Check.
Check your blood pressure yet?
And check.
Boom! Great job, Mom. And about those gold earrings?
No, ma'am.
Now more than ever, it's important that we protect our hearts and the hearts of those we love. Monitor your blood pressure daily and help each other stay motivated. Rally your squad to take the online pledge at releasethepressure.org. Brought to you by the Release the Pressure Coalition and the Ad Council.
Good morning. Welcome back to Analyze This. I'm Emil Henderson III, and I have in studio with me Ms. Jamila Russell, the former ADA coordinator. And for the last hour and a half, we've been discussing parents and dealing with the pandemic and virtual learning with children with special needs. If you want to join the conversation, call us at 340-718-0761. Before we went to break, I was asking you about the virtual learning and the legal issues that could crop up for parents with special needs children where some needs may not be met because they're being educated virtually. And the fact that that can morph its way into a violation of the law. What can we do to make sure that that doesn't happen?
Well, you know, across the nation, and let me just preface this. Let me preface this like I do on all shows. I'm not the sister with ESQ behind her
name. That's correct. You're not a lawyer. You're not dispensing any legal advice because I would hate for your name to go down to Tanisha Bailey Roca for a violation, for practicing law without a license.
Listen, and I have a wonderful attorney friend who have advised me that whenever I go on the air, it's appropriate to say that I am not the, my legal disclaimer is I am not the sister with ESQ behind her name. So I am not a lawyer, but I do know that across the nation, that continues to be an issue with special education and the delivery of services to students with disabilities. And in many areas, that is why the school districts across the nation have reopened and have children in school. And a lot of those places opened up this year completely. And students who were supposed to have been serviced last year with occupational physical therapy, speech therapy, they're now getting, you know, compensatory therapy time. There have been provisions made where instead of in the academic setting, the services that's included in your IEP, because remember your IEP is a legally binding document that follows the child.
Right.
And those services in a lot of school districts across the nation were subcontracted out to providers in their setting so that it removed the school from having to deal with the whole issue of coronavirus. They contracted it out here locally.
Because a lot of states were being sued.
Yes, yes.
For not providing the what the law required. And they were not accepting COVID restrictions or the pandemic as an excuse.
Yeah, the judge said so. Yeah. The judges said so. And there were some districts that appealed and lost on appeal. And so basically the judges said the law is the law. These children aren't less than. You're brilliant. Figure it out. There must be a way for you to be able to provide this service safely to students within the during the pandemic. Locally, there hasn't been any legal action taken against the Department of Education. So the Department of Education really should be counting their blessings because, and I think it's because of there isn't the push by any one person to ensure that, you know, back in the day when the ADA became law and individuals with disabilities couldn't ride the bus, we had a Uncle Sonny, the Army of One, advocating. There isn't a singular person leading the cause for education. The Disability Rights Center used to, as one of their planks that they advocated for was the delivery of special education in the schools. But I don't think that they filed any legal action in regards to the delivery of education to special needs students during the pandemic. I don't know if it's because their offices weren't receiving complaints, and it may very well be that parents here in the territory are operating with limited knowledge in that your child still deserves to be educated and educated well. The law calls for fair and appropriate public education, and the individualized education plan is a legally binding document. And so I think that this Department of Education has fared well because parents locally are understanding of the pandemic and ain't kicking up a fuss.
Possible.
Yeah.
But I also find that a lot of parents now than in the past are much more in tune with the rights of their children than they did before.
Yes.
And so they're now asking a lot more questions, and they are participating a lot more than they have, at least in my experience, than they have in the past. Yeah.
And I think that what's happening too is that one-on-one, like if you have a child with occupational issues and you're like, okay, well, how are we going to address this? I can only speak for my case. I'm like, okay, so how are we going to do this? The Department of Education, again, you know, Lyria and Cheryl Serrano Griffith, Lyria Bryan Heiliger, we call her by her legal name. They have been very responsive, and they provide a resolution to what is there. You know, I'm like, okay, so Shashamani isn't tolerant of the virtual. How are we going to do that? And so he has really good aides. He has Risa Adams and Charisse Williams.
Okay.
They prepare packages, and they bring it to him. You know, they come and they drop off the packages, and then they go over stuff as tolerant as he can be on the computer, and then you return the packages, getting the packages done with me as a mother, you know. Sometimes don't be so good, right? But then you exchange packages. So I will say that, and parents, when they have the town hall meetings, parents ask questions. You're absolutely right. Parents ain't in that with them no more.
Can any parent join in on this call, on this virtual town hall, or is it something only for parents of children with special needs?
Oh, no, that's just for we. Are you supposed to have your own?
Because I think aside from the distinction between special needs and non-special needs, mm-hmm. I think all parents are having a difficulty with having to be parent and teacher in a virtual learning.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's something that the Department of Education, if they're not doing, I can't say that they're not.
And that's what I'm saying. I can't tell you.
If they are not doing it, maybe it is something the Department of Education should look into, doing some virtuals to kind of help out. Like they do professional days for the teachers, professional days for the parents as they're going through this process.
I don't know if they do that for regular students. I know that Ms. Serrano does it for us.
Okay.
And they send out emails, and and they have been responsive to us. But it is very challenging. Mm-hmm. But I want parents to know, and Department of Education may not want me to advocate for this, but I'm going to say, if your child has an IEP and you feel like the last year and a half, last 2 years, that their educational, the delivery of their educational services have diminished, you have a right to keep your child in school till 21. So let them catch it up on the back end. And so don't be despaired and don't, you know, every child reaches milestones differently. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody wants to see their child in a cap and gown and graduating. Don't rush it. If you feel like your child can benefit from remaining in the environment, allow them to remain in the environment. And then when they graduate, you still have the celebration, but you know that when they leave, that they're good.
Right. Now, what can we do? Now, we've been talking a lot about children with special needs, and I think we've talked about them in the context of them being younger. So what can we do now to prepare our students who have special needs who are now going to morph into young adulthood? Mm-hmm. What are we doing to prepare them to live independently?
Well, we can talk about that. That's a whole other hour and a half conversation. Hour and a half,
I agree.
And so several things. So when they transition...
Let's hit some bullet points.
Bullet points. When they transition out of education... then they become the responsibility of the Department of Human Services.
Okay.
The Department of Human Services have programs for adults with disabilities. And one of those is the Voc Rehabilitation Program. Mm-hmm. And they should be transitioning over to that Voc Rehabilitation Program. The Department of Human Services have contracts with facilities across the United States that can train adults to the best of their abilities to find a vocation that they could possibly earn an income from. Also through the Department of Human Services in collaboration with nonprofit organizations, they've built some assisted living facilities where if you have a young adult that can live on their own, they have apartment complexes that are specially designated for adults with disabilities. We have one in Frederiksted. Then there's a group home for those who can't live independently and need care. That's also in Frederiksted. So parents can recognize that there are services provided after the children have developed their gotten their education through the Department of Human Services to continue to be the best and the best productive citizen they can be with the nature of their disability. And so we just need to encourage, especially if you have a cognitive disability, and a cognitive disability is one that limits your ability to think. You have a reduced capacity to understand, so you want to be able to know that those your adult is in an environment where their existence is subsidized somewhat with somebody who can look over what they're doing so that nobody takes advantage of them. Because I say this all the time, I'll come back from the grave and haunt you and pull your toe. Right? So they are those types of services.
Okay. And so is this something that's shared with parents of children with special needs as they get to that area where they can then transfer over to services?
Under the law, you're supposed to have a transitional IEP where the Department of Human Services then comes in and sits in on the IEP, and you have your... When a child transitions from the Department of Education, they're supposed to have like a life plan that, you know, then when they go to human services can then help them to achieve that through their Voc Rehabilitation Program.
Through their program.
So that answer is yes.
And then that actually allows them to be able to be a part of the community, mm-hmm, in a way that people look at as normalcy.
Yes. Get a job, walk. I have already, and let me just say, I'm here today at WTJX, and I would be wrong if I left this radio station without saying that the legislature had a summer youth employment program. Shashamani's 14. I think he was to the age. And I mentioned to the CEO of this radio station, I said, you know, I want to get Shashamani in the youth employment program. And she said, well, he likes gadgets. He likes computers. He likes radio. He like gadgets. Mm-hmm. She was like, well, we could see if we could do something here at Channel 12 with him. And so that's the kind of interactions that we need when you have summer employment programs, that they're organizations that are willing to take a child who may have a disability and say, hey, you have a 3-week training. I we don't mind bringing you in if this is what the child likes to do. So more organizations like that needs to happen, because when you have youth employment programs in the summer, you don't often hear about children with disabilities being right. employed. We tried to do it. Hurricanes Irma and Maria kind of mess up our plans, but we were heading in that direction and we were able to get students placed. We, you know, so you have to get the community engaged and get the community involved. And I think that we have really good partners. Like Shashamani is going to have a job because, you know, I have people that gonna hire him. You know, we lining it up. You know, you're gonna train him so he can work, because he can't be on my payroll forever. So we have to try to get those types of involvement, and that's done through the vocational rehabilitation program.
Through the Department of Human Services.
Through the Department of Human Services. So if you're an employer, it's kind of like the senior citizen program. There's for disabilities.
Okay, so I thank you for being on the show, Jamila. You've said a lot. You've taught us a lot. At least I've learned a lot today. And we hope that this experience today and this discourse that we had today will reach some people, and hopefully they'll be able to take accommodations the way that they need to and do what they need to do. This has been Analyze This, and we thank you for listening. I thank you for listening and welcoming me here today, and I'll see you guys next week. Have a great weekend and be safe.
Bye-bye.
Expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.